allies and anybody that wants to learn more about the LGBT plus community. My name is Zanardi, and I'm so glad all your beautiful faces are here. Welcome back to episode 9 of the Alphabet Mafia podcast. Before we get started, I want to say thank you all so much to those that support the podcast and those that listen. You guys really mean a lot. If you could take 30 to 60 seconds and just write a review, that would help out so much and give context to people as to why they should listen to this podcast and what value it brings to them. We really appreciate all the love and support that you have shown us so far. Today's guest is named Brian. He's a 30-year-old gay man who immigrated to the United States when he was 13 years old. He served in the Navy during the Don't Ask, Don't Tell times and really had a tough time, you know, serving while being closeted. A lot of our discussion is about the burden of being closeted and not really being able to be yourself and how to cope with that. So without further ado, here's Brian. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, tell me just a little bit about yourself, about your life.
So my name is Brian. Mm-hmm. I grew up in the Philippines. I came to the States when I was 13. So I grew up very poor, mm-hmm. Kind of rural farmland area in the Philippines, and very Roman Catholic background. Mm-hmm. And everyone and every neighbor, every family is Roman Catholic. So that was, it's kind of how we grew up. You pray before bed, you pray before dinner, you go to church every Sunday. It was 2003 when I got to the States, so took a little bit getting rid of the accent, so I think I'm doing a pretty good job not showing the accent.
I wouldn't have guessed. And how was that transition for you in terms of, was it, you know, obviously a little bit scary, but were you like bullied at all for being different, being from the Philippines, or?
Oddly not, actually.
No.
I was in San Jose at the time.
Okay.
And no, it was a pretty good transition, just a lot of culture shock.
Yeah.
I wasn't used to wearing jackets, because in the Philippines it's an eternal summer. Mm-hmm. Every day you wear tank top, shorts, and flip-flops, and then I came here, I was freezing, and it was summer, and everyone's asking like, why are you cold? It's not even cold. I'm like, this is cold for me. And school is actually really easy, mm-hmm. here compared to the Philippines.
Okay.
A lot of people don't know, we don't have junior high in the Philippines, so after elementary school, we jump right into high school. Mm-hmm. So by 16, you're done with high school.
Wow.
Yeah, but that means all our curricula is very packed.
Right.
And you have to meet certain standards for you to move in the on the next stage. Whereas to here, school is very up to you what you want to take. So mm-hmm. I was overjoyed with that thought because I love school and I graduated with 4.0, which
wow.
was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. But definitely the ESL group helped me a lot because I wasn't the only Filipino in the class.
Mm-hmm.
There were Hispanics, there were people from other countries like Chinese, and we were all learning English together.
Okay.
We kind of kept ourselves together, so we weren't,
sure.
maybe we weren't bullied because we were in a group.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So, okay. And did you know much English at all when you started moving here, or were you basically starting from scratch?
That's a good question. We learn it, but then mm-hmm. it's kind of like you learning Spanish here.
Gotcha.
You don't use it, so it goes away.
Mm-hmm.
So, the exposure part, I think, is what helps a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we learned it in primary grade.
Okay.
Yeah, as it's mandatory, mm-hmm. but you don't use it.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. And so then you get to the States. You're 13 years old, and you identify as a gay man, right?
Yes.
Cool. And when did, talk to me about that. When did that start coming up, I guess? When did you start beginning that journey?
If I'm honest with myself, probably around the time I was going to high school here.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, it wasn't as smooth as a transition as I would have liked, but no one's transition is smooth, I guess.
Sure.
I had a girlfriend in high school.
Okay.
So I had that machismo attitude because I come from a Catholic family.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't actually fully come out till a few months ago. So,
mm.
yeah.
Congratulations.
So, thank you. Thank
yeah.
you. And everyone's journey is different. And
right.
I'm taking that part of my life as my own journey. And So I want to say junior year high school is when I really started getting attraction to males. And though I kept it from everyone but myself, mm-hmm. just that internal turmoil of, hey, I might not be what my parents want me to be.
Right.
And my church says I can't be that. So I tried to fight it.
Yeah. Yeah, junior high, that's, you know, when most people start developing those feelings. What exactly were those feelings? Were you just noticing you were looking at guys, or did you start getting into, you know, more like pornography type? Like, how explicit were these attractions?
I think,
if you could pinpoint it.
I had several friends that I was attracted to more than just being friends. Like, I had what if moments in my head, just never acted on them. They were lingering thoughts, mm-hmm. I guess, and I just kind of focused my mind on something else so I don't think about it, because the consequences of that other part is too big for me to handle.
Right.
So I actually didn't do anything with guys till I got in the Navy. So after high school, I joined the Navy at 19. Mm-hmm. So I was stationed in Guam, and it was the first time I was away from family. I was away from everything, and it's my first time being independent and on my own. And it wasn't until a friend of mine, and we actually had a Navy ball where everyone dresses up and people could drink.
Yeah.
And the drinking gauge back then in Guam was 18, and I was 19, so I could drink.
Yeah.
And it was just after the ball, me and a couple of buddies got drinking, and then I slept over at my friend's house because it was right there. And he actually kissed me. And that was my first exposure to a guy, and I was confused.
Right.
And I fought it for the longest time. And we actually didn't talk for a couple of weeks after that. And then we got to talking again. And I've known him for a while. We actually flew to boot camp together. We were in boot camp together. We were bunkmates. And then we just happened to get stationed in Guam together.
Wow.
We were on and off for a while.
So yeah.
This is actually my first boyfriend.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's actually really cute of a story.
Right. it's like a movie.
Yeah, right. so he kissed you, and you initially said that you kind of withdrew and didn't talk to him. What were your internal feelings when he kissed you? Like, what was going on through your head and everywhere else, I guess?
It was I think there was some friction, but in my head, but with alcohol, with being away, with being like trying to be independent in my own person, I didn't fight it as much.
Right.
I just kind of let it be.
But was it a feeling of, oh, this is right, almost? Was it like a okay? But then of course, you know, your brain is telling you don't do this. You can't do this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was a. Like, I've never been happy before.
Yeah.
It's like eating, it's like going to a buffet for the first time.
Yeah.
And I didn't get to do that till I got to the States, because in the Philippines, we don't have buffets.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually a funny story. I'm going to segue into it. My first week here, my dad took me and my brother. We both came here. I was 13. He was 14. He took us to a buffet, and my dad just kept getting plates. And me and my brother were worrying. I'm like, we can't afford all these plates.
Yeah.
And we didn't know what a buffet was, and we were shocked. So it was like, we could eat whatever we want. Kind of realization, and I'm like,
And the ice cream and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it was that feeling, but with more butterflies.
Sure.
If we want to be cliche about it.
Yeah.
It was uplifting. I was overjoyed with finally realizing, hey, this is what I really want. This is what I really like.
Yeah. And the aversion to all the feelings, kind of talk to me about that, like your upbringing, your family dynamic, and why you were feeling these aversions, you think.
So growing up, we didn't really have a gay member in the family.
Mm-hmm.
Even with our extended family, there was only one, and we hardly hear from them. It's a tough subject to listen to, because just being with family, a commercial comes in and it's a gay man talking, and my mom and dad would say something really, really offensive and really hurtful, they don't know that it hurts me, but it hurts me. So eventually it digs in into you and says, I can't be that because my family says I can't be, and they would hate me if I was.
Yeah.
So I fought that for the longest time. And when I was just figuring that I like guys, it was tough. So it was even harder to go to church because I felt like God was judging me, but when really it's myself judging me based on my parents' beliefs. That I was a bad person and I can't go to heaven because my family says I can't because of these things, or the Bible says I can't because of these things. It was a long journey for acceptance, and I think that I had to go through a lot of years before I could accept myself. And with therapy. Before I could accept myself.
Wow. So, so obviously just a rough environment in terms of the idea of being gay, or, you know, LGBT acceptance, that, you know, in your family. So then going back to, you know, your night out with the Navy guy, he became your first boyfriend. Talk to me about the few weeks and months after all this was taking place. Like, how are you dealing with, you know, you're accepting yourself, I guess, and also apparently hiding it from your family or friends?
So it was tough. It was probably one of the darkest moments of my life because I was 19 and I'm just learning that, hey, I'm gay. This means I have to separate my life and myself from my family. Otherwise, the greatest fear in my head is getting kicked out of the house, right? So before that, even that eventuality, it set in quickly in my head, and that was like the lowest of low when I think of something about me being gay. Like, I can't, because I'm gonna get kicked out of my family, and we only have each other, so I can't be gay because I'm gonna lose my mom, and I love my mom. I'm gonna lose my siblings, and I love my siblings. So I turned to alcohol. So, and I think that's the negative thing about being in Guam, where drinking age was 18. I was able to drink, and I drank significantly to not think about it. So I delved into my work, I delved into school full time, both at the same time, and I kept my secret, and I only had very, very few friends who I told myself to, because at the time, don't ask, don't tell was in effect. So for those who don't know, you can't ask if someone's gay, and you can't tell if you're gay.
Right.
And that's just against the rules. And what scared me even more is at my command, someone was actually kicked out for being outed as gay.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was really scary, because this was someone I worked with and I knew, and I knew they were gay, but I didn't think it would come to that, you know, him getting kicked out because he was gay.
Wow. Yeah. And that's crazy, because I know that was, Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed in what, 2012? Okay. So still fairly recent, you know,
it's
last decade. And what was the general, I don't want to say stigma, but I guess stigma, or what was the general thought of LGBT in the military, or gays in the military? Like, were there also a lot of homophobic remarks that there would be passively being made? Like, let's say Don't Ask, Don't Tell didn't exist. What would the dynamic have been like, you know, being in the military and being gay? Did you feel accepted? Or
I think if it didn't exist, then I would feel accepted.
Okay.
I would be able to put a picture of my boyfriend right there where I'm sitting and working, and no one could say anything, or they could say something and it could be negative or positive, but then it would just be that.
Right.
But I couldn't do that because I can't say, or I can't publicly do it, you know?
Okay.
Because it would be the same thing as saying that you are.
Gotcha. Because I hadn't had a full understanding of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. That's crazy. Like, you couldn't carry or have a picture of your significant other or anything because it would out you.
Yeah.
And that's the wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's very, that, yeah, that's got to be, so what did it feel like, I guess, then being in the military and kind of having this burden over you that you can't be out, you can't be proud of your...
it solidified that, you know, I can't be gay, then maybe I shouldn't be gay because my family says no, the people that I work for says no, and I must have not be gay, you know. I keep telling myself, you know, crying in bed, drunk, saying, no, I can't be because I'm going to lose everything. Yeah. And I was afraid to lose my job. I was afraid to lose my family. And that was everything. Mm-hmm. And that's all I had.
Wow.
Until it finally, Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed. And we had a massive celebration. And it was awesome. And people came out and people were hugging each other. And then the next day, it's like nothing happened.
Yeah.
But you can tell it's starting to get better.
Right. So what was that like? So you were still actively in the military when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed. And you know, once it's announced, was it like a party where everyone's like, hey, I'm gay, hey, I'm... Or tell me about that night or that day.
I was actually in training when it was repealed, and I didn't find out till that weekend.
Okay.
So it wasn't really a cause... At the time, I was very isolated, and that's all actually a part of my own doing because that's a part of my defense mechanism. Mm-hmm. I'm really good at avoidance, and that's very unfortunate because instead of facing things, I just turned the other direction, and instead of me having to deal with things, I avoid to feel less pain.
Right.
That's terrible, but I'm learning that now and facing that now. And looking back, it's like, wow, I did a lot of avoidance.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a big deal for me, but I didn't celebrate with other people. So
okay.
I rallied on my own while I was training.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was just like, yes.
Yeah, like a relieving feeling.
It was.
For sure.
Yeah, because I know a lot of the people who were fighting it and was a part of the coalition to end Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Wow.
And... yeah, and one of my good friends, he was actually helped create this group. It's called Modern Military Association of America, and they are a free legal advice givers / like protectors for LGBT families, members, and their like our allies.
Mm-hmm.
And he became a big proponent of that,
mm-hmm.
and I was happy. For me, but mostly happy for my friends who helped defeat Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yeah, yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Great. And then, so, what did your life look like from there? Don't Ask, Don't Tell is repealed. Are you actively coming out now, or how? Because the burden's been lifted from the military. You're not going to lose your job, but obviously you still have to worry about your family and maybe friends or whatever. Where does it go from there?
So it seemed like when that was going on, it was another hard, you know, brick door after another. Because after I left Guam, I came into a Marine Corps unit.
Mm.
So actually stationed here in Pendleton.
Yeah.
And just kind of never left the area. So it was a different kind of mindset where you had to be masculine when you were with the guys.
Mm.
And I didn't know many, actually hardly any at all, openly gay service members serving with the Marines. So my job was, I was a corpsman, and a lot of people don't know that Marines don't have their medics, is what they're called in the Army, but in the Navy Marine Corps, we call them corpsmen.
Mm-hmm.
So the Navy provides medics for the Marine Corps, so I was that medic.
Okay.
So a part of being that is building trust with your Marines and... you know, so they would trust you. If they get shot, you're the one to patch them up.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes with being assertive to who you are and them liking you, but in your own way kind of thing. You have to be one of the guys.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And at the time, my leadership were very gung-ho and very masculine and very... if you're not like us, you're not one of us kind of mentality.
Right.
They had the one size fits all mentality. Gotcha. And obviously, I wasn't like the rest of them. So that actually kind of delved me deeper into my depression, because now I'm working with people who are not only negative about the gay community, but there's no one to talk to. So I was just in my barracks alone, and my depression became really, really bad. And that's actually when my commanding officer told me, you have to go to counseling, because it's starting to affect my job. I wasn't sleeping at all.
Wow.
Yeah, so I was in therapy for about 3 months.
Okay.
Like, extensively, like, going every day, because I had very bad suicidal thoughts. And I actually, the friends that I did have, I told them, there was several nights that I could remember trying to overdose on my sleeping meds, because I couldn't sleep, because that's how bad it was getting. I told them, hey, could you come to my room and could you take my sleeping meds, because I'm having really bad thoughts. And he was a really good friend, and I don't know if he realized how big that was for me, but he took my meds, and that was huge, because I did not intend to wake up the next morning.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's very rough and very surreal. I mean, I think a lot of people have those thoughts, going to bed, crying themselves to sleep. Like, a lot of us have been there. And so this all, I guess, stems from this feeling of being trapped, because you know who you are, you know the who you like, what your sexuality is, but you just feel like you can't break out. You can't be yourself.
Right.
And from layers of different, you know, sides, right? Family, and then it was in general just the military. Now it's specifically your corps or your unit. And it leads you down this very dark path. So you start your therapy. What happens there? How do they help you, you know, kind of rebound and figure it out?
Yeah, so I was in a program called the Intensive Outpatient Program. Mm-hmm. And then in there, they teach a CBT, which is Cognitive Behavioral Therapy. And we had individual therapy and group therapy also. Mm-hmm. So I was grouped with a bunch of active duty Marines and sailors who were dealing with the same thing, not necessarily about being gay and coming out, but with depression and suicidality and not coming to terms with things in your life, right? And that was 8 weeks of that, and I think I came out, and maybe on the fourth week, I remember it was something later, but I wished I came out to the group earlier, because I would have probably had a much more, I don't know what the word is, but I came out later, but when I did, it was positive.
Good.
And that's actually one of the few positive moments where I was accepted. And I don't want to say I've never had that, but it was a different kind of acceptance that I got. And because it was from a group of people and I saw them every day, so therefore we build rapport. And like, okay, so here's this Marine, and she's dealing with stuff. And she says, we're going to be there for each other. Mm-hmm. And we were. And that was like a little family that we had over there. And I had a friend there, he's a sergeant, and he was a drill instructor at a school of infantry. So he was teaching Marines how to shoot properly, essentially was his job. And to this day, he's still one of my good friends. He's straight. Mm-hmm. He has three kids. Mm-hmm. And I text him every now and then. We check up on each other, like, hey, how are you doing?
Yeah.
And every once in a while, he lives in Corona. I drive over there, they have me over, and I watch the kids, and we catch up.
That's awesome.
And that's actually the greatest, like, friendship I have to this day. Because when I have bad times, it's always him that I call first. Mm-hmm. And I think he does the same thing to me, where when he's having a bad time, he always knows I'm there for him. So we have that bond that we share.
Through that group.
Wow. And that was 8 years ago now. Yeah. And it's crazy thinking back.
Yeah.
But it was because of CBT and that group and having people accept me that I started to feel better about myself. Mm-hmm. And after I graduated from IOP, my senior enlisted leader actually transferred me to a different unit because he probably read my file, honestly, because that transfer doesn't happen very often.
Sure.
But he transferred me out of the unit and transferred me to the hospital. And the hospital is actually a very open and nice environment. Yeah. And I thrived in that environment. I could be myself and I felt better. And I was actually helping patients. And I, you know, waking up every day wasn't as bad.
Because
now I have my friends from CBT to talk to.
Yeah.
And I still wasn't talking to my family at the time. Still can't talk to them about it. Mm-hmm. But at least I had that group that I could hold on to when things get bad.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the therapy group, were there, I'm just curious, were there other people that were going through the same thing that were gay or LGBTQ that's why they were there as well?
No, not that they came out.
Okay.
I came out latter, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was. Because some of them, I don't know what they were there for.
Right.
Because it's really up to you if you want to share or not.
Sure.
But then I figured if I'm not sharing, then I'm not getting anything out of the group.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Therapy was great if you actually dive into it. But for a lot of people being forced to go to therapy, they're not at that pre-contemplation stage where they're ready to talk.
Right.
Because you can't force people to be in therapy. They have to be ready for it.
Yeah.
Right? And for my case, I was forced to go to therapy. And although I wasn't ready, it took me a little bit to be ready to share my experiences. And I know now that sharing my experiences actually makes me feel better. And hearing about other people's coming out stories makes me feel better. You know, everyone has their journey.
Right.
And I feel like I had to go through that journey to get to where I am now.
So then you work in the hospital. How long were you there in doing that position?
I was there for a year, just a little over a year and some change. And then I got out of the military at that same command.
And, and the rest of that year was good?
Yeah.
Mental health-wise and just, you know, overall? And you're out to obviously your therapy group. Did you start coming out to other people that you know, other coworkers or people that you saw on occasion?
Eventually. Some people that I work with, I felt comfortable being around them, and we worked 12 hours a day together.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I came out to a majority of them actually.
Okay.
We had a bonfire, and we kind of just started talking about stuff. And then they kind of not forced me into talking, but like they're like, Brian, do you have anything to say to the group, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, here's the conch shell, kind of thing. So I came out to them, and it was amazing because they're like, they had the I love you, brother, no matter who you are, or no matter what you love.
Yeah.
And that was good, and that solidified that idea of, hey, maybe sharing and that acceptance, but trust has to be there for you to share, because you can't just share experiences to random strangers, because being vulnerable with strangers isn't really vulnerability.
Yeah, that's amazing. So then you get out of the military shortly after that, right? Mm-hmm. Where does life take you from there?
So from there, I got out February 2017, and then I moved to Irvine because I started school for my undergrad in social work.
Okay.
And then 2 months later, I got a job from that same hospital.
Oh,
so
wow.
I actually work here.
Okay.
They kept me because they liked my work ethic. So
yeah.
I still actually work there. So I've been there this whole time.
Yeah.
But as a civilian.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so still not out to family, right?
I came out on my 30th birthday last year, so November last year, which was 3-4 months ago.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's It's a little funny story. When I was 21, on my 21st birthday, I told myself, and it was painful, because I said, I'm going to give myself 10 years, and by the time I'm 30, I have to be out. Mm. That's like a covenant I made to myself.
Yeah.
And it was always there, and it's lingering, and every year that I only go home once a year, and it's usually during Thanksgiving, I set it up so I could come out to family. Like, I would gather the whole family, and during dinner, I'm just going to come out, right? Yeah. But every year, it doesn't happen. It's always something happens, or something with my sister, or it's not the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize it's never going to be the right time. So this past Thanksgiving, I got everyone together for dinner, but didn't do it. So I had everything written down, and what I ended up doing is sending them like a really, really, really long text.
Yeah.
And it had headings.
Like a group text or just individual?
It was a group text.
Oh my
to
God.
My brother, my sister, my mom, and my dad.
Yeah.
And it had heading, subheading. Like, it lists my story of my secret, my depression, delving into being medicated, not sleeping, being in therapy, and coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And it all, I wrote it. I wrote it all, and I sent it probably 2 or 3 in the morning. So, and then I left at dawn. Like, I didn't wake anyone up. I sent it. I drove.
Wow.
So from San Jose to here, it was like 7 hours,
mm-hmm.
longest drive of my life. Yeah. And probably an hour or two after I left, my sister texted me, "Hey, why didn't you tell me sooner or early? Like what's up?"
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "I love you," and I was crying. I was bawling in my way. Like, I love my sister.
Yeah.
I think I'm the second oldest of four.
It's, okay.
She's the youngest. So she has 3 older brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And her and I are the most alike out of all the brothers.
Yeah.
I don't have anything in common with my brothers. But yeah. And that was a great feeling. And then after that, 7 o'clock in the morning, my little brother texted me like, "Hey, I don't care who you love. I love you because you're my brother."
Wow.
So there's that. And then I was giving my parents time to muddle things over and see how they would think. And to this day, well, it's only been a couple of months.
Right.
Still haven't seen them face to face. But from then, my mom's called me a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
We still don't talk about it, but I'm giving them the space they need.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah.
I said my part. So the ball is in their hand, how they want to take it.
Mm-hmm.
But
so you said they haven't talked, they haven't acknowledged it at all, they didn't respond to that text, they didn't say, like, it's not acknowledged. Is that what happened, or?
It's unclear, because they acknowledge it, but not really.
Gotcha.
They go around it saying, it's not your fault. And I still don't know what that means, because the text came from both of them, they both said, it's not your fault. And there was no context, and I don't want to ask what context they were thinking about.
Right.
But the first phone call I got from my mom, which is probably a couple of days after I had come out, as long as you're God-fearing, or as long we know that you're a good person, and as long as you go to church, then it'll be okay.
Yeah.
But I still don't know where that part came from, where it says it's not your fault.
Right. On the optimistic side, you know, maybe they're like, it's okay, you're born this way, like. You
maybe,
know, the accepting, like, yeah, it's not, you know,
yeah.
We're all just different. But
yeah. I'm trying to give them as much space as they want,
yeah.
/ need, because they probably do need that space.
Sure.
And in my text, I said in there, you know what you know, because that's how you grew up at. You, that's what your parents told you, and that's what you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I can't fault you for that. So I actually said that in my text. And, but, however, comma, this is who I am, and your current religion doesn't accept me.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, I can't be in that religion where it's toxic, because it's been toxic this whole time for me. So I gave them the ball, like, hey, here's me. Now it's your turn.
Yeah. So are you no longer religious anymore?
I want to say I am Christian agnostic.
Okay, Christian agnostic,
I'm right in between.
Yeah.
It's a nice thought to have heaven after this, but
right.
just, I just don't believe in the guidelines of, you know, you're good, you go here, you're bad,
right,
you go here.
Right.
Definitely not the part about, like, homosexuality is
sure.
a sin, because how can an omnipotent God create me in mm-hmm. his own image just to, you know, burn in hell?
Right.
That's kind of defeats the purpose of having a God. Like,
that's
why would I be created to be condemned?
And God's a sadist, if that's the
right.
case.
Yeah.
You think.
And that's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do believe in a lot of the teachings in the Catholic Church mm-hmm. where, you know, you're a good person, you love your neighbor, you treat everyone as you want to be treated as. And a part of that, you know, the divinity of love
yeah.
that they teach in my church is you love others how you want to be loved.
Right.
Right?
The whole treat others the way you want to be treated, the golden rule, as they call it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a really nice thought. And I think the Bible teaches you how to be a good human.
Mm-hmm.
If you look into the good stuff of it.
Sure.
Versus the condemning side where
right.
it kind of gets bad.
It's strange because the whole anti-LGBT thing coming, and then, you know, citing the Bible, it's very nitpicky because a lot of the verses, if you look, are surrounded by verses that are saying, like, you know, don't trim your beard, or don't
yeah.
you know, wear certain cloths, or don't eat pork. And it's like, why did we pick those to ignore, and then we're gonna discriminate against being gay? It's strange.
It is strange
that it went that way, that we're gonna discriminate against other humans, but, like, we don't care if you eat pork or if you
yeah.
do.
And I think it's just whoever is in power at the time, and it's like, all right, we're gonna update the Bible.
Yeah.
New Testament, Old
yeah.
Testament. We're going to add these scriptures because we don't like these.
Mm.
And that's how it is. And
because I know the Pope recently, I think it might have been last year, came out and just said, not came out, but came out and said that being gay is okay.
Yeah.
What did you think of that? And then do you know if your parents heard anything of that or had thoughts on that?
I was actually listening intently for when he said that, and
yeah.
that remark was, I thought, was very progressive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Pope sees how many LGBTs there are in the community,
right.
and he sees all these lives that need to be saved and souls that need to be saved. So he opens the doors. And I think that's the way to actually help others. You just open the door.
Yeah.
You don't judge them. You don't close the door on them, because that's what the church is for. You're there so you can have a relationship with your God,
mm-hmm.
right? Even though it's their specific God,
mm-hmm.
you open the door. And he's the first pope to ever acknowledge that the gay community exists, and hey, we should probably help them also.
Yeah.
And that's really awesome. My parents haven't said anything
okay.
about the Pope and his progressiveness.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Maybe hopefully they'll, you know, heed his advice.
Yeah, I hope so.
Heed his words of wisdom.
Yeah.
So what, and you're studying therapy, right? Or you're studying to become a therapist or a social worker?
I am in grad school to get my master in social work.
Okay.
And hopefully eventually get my licensed clinical social worker.
Gotcha.
So I can help others.
Yeah.
Dealing with the same issues, because I feel like I'm in a spot where I can relate to a lot of groups. So I'm an immigrant,
mm-hmm.
I'm a veteran, I'm gay,
mm-hmm.
and that's, I'm hitting a lot of underserved communities.
Right.
And I feel like if my experience could touch others,
yeah.
I think I could help a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a home run. Like,
yeah.
Marking them off. There's so many immigrants. They need, there's a lot of them that need help.
Yeah.
Veterans, they're on the streets. Like, there's a lot of them that need help. Gays, obviously, we need help. So I think what you're doing is beautiful, and that you're, you know, dedicating your career to serving those communities and to help them. What advice would you have for anyone listening that might be connecting to you on a few levels here? What would you tell someone that is kind of going through similar feelings?
Yeah, so if I was talking to myself, and I wasn't out yet at 19, I probably would tell him that just take your time, go through your own journey, try to find ways to accept yourself. Mm-hmm. So that's actually, it sounds easy to do, but self-acceptance is where we start healing.
Yeah.
Because if you can't accept yourself, it's hard to love others, right? So once you have love for yourself, then you can start opening that up to loving others. So you have to treat yourself as, like a genuinely healthy version of yourself.
Right.
What do you see yourself as doing tomorrow, right? Does that mean like holding someone's hand, and that might be a guy, and that might be against your parents' rules. Mm-hmm. But if that's what you want in your life, you have to start accepting yourself, and then eventually your life will form and fold into others knowing, hey, this is what makes him happy. And
yeah.
Sometimes that means you're going to lose other people.
Right.
But all that also sometimes mean you're going to have other people accept you and become family, even though they're not blood.
Yeah.
But yeah, self-acceptance.
That's beautiful. Yeah. It all starts there. It really does. Brian, thank you. I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your story. It was very touching and, you know, gut-wrenching at some points, the story. So.
Thanks for having me, Ryan.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you all for tuning in. You guys are amazing. I really appreciate you all listening and for your support. As a reminder, you can find us at www.thealphabetmafia.com. If you want to be featured on the blog, go ahead and email us at podcast@thealphabetmafia.com. Remember, you are not alone. For anyone out there that is struggling, that doesn't feel like anyone cares, they might feel alone. Remember, you are not alone. You are the hero. You are loved. You are valid. And if you are in need of serious help, please, please, please check out thetrevorproject.org or give them a call at 1-866-488-7386. Again, remember, you are loved, and I want you to know that no matter what. Thank you all for tuning in to the show. Have a beautiful morning, evening, whatever it is. Good night.